What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Believe in Texans podcast. We are joined today with Believe in Falcons, Will McFadden. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Will.
I appreciate it, Harley. Thank you for having me on. So I'm the host of Believe in Falcons with former Falcons fullback Ovi Mahaley. I covered the team for AtlantaFalcons.com from 2017 through the 2020 season. And now you can find my written work over at the Falcoholic, or again, check out Believe in Falcons. But, you know, we also live in the internet age. You can just Google me and probably find everything you need to know right there. But for the next however long, I'm so excited to talk, which should be a really fun and interesting matchup with you, Harley.
Yeah, I'm very excited to get into the game and everything. This is going to be a lot of fun. There's a few former Texans coaches on the staff for the Falcons, so that's fun. I think the matchups are going to be interesting, and I hope the national media love doesn't get into our Houston Texans' head, because that has been the talk everywhere across national media. Houston Texans, CJ Stroud, DeMeco Ryans, that has been banging on the table. So, you know, before we get into that, I want to go ahead and get it for a word from BetMGM, or Bet Online, excuse me. Football is back, and Bet Online is your number one information source for all your sports wagering info, with all the up-to-date minute stats, news, scores, and matchup breakdowns. Get the latest games, odds, spreads, and totals from the NFL and CFB at your fingertips with Bet Online's real-time updates on statistics, news, and odds. From week one all the way to the college football playoffs, Super Bowl, Bet Online gives you access to the best football promotions and context available anywhere online. Head to the website today, use your mobile device, get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BLEAV, gets your 50% off to welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. Well, let's get into that, because whoo, that was a mouthful. Let's get into this game. First time doing that, huh? Anybody that's listening, first time solo doing it. No Ruben today, by the way, guys. He is busy with some, some other stuff on the way. So, you know, he's got something planned. We got some good plans in the works for the Texans fans everywhere. So make sure y'all are tuning in to Believe in Texans. Will, my guy, Texans Falcons, man. This is this week's game. I am excited about it. But I want a temperature check real quick, man, because I just came off a previous Falcons podcast and the temperature was a little dark. It was a little sad, man. The vibes weren't immaculate in Atlanta. Let me know, man. What is the temp check down there right now?
It's not great. It's definitely as low as it's been in a long time, because pretty much since the 2022 season ended, it's kind of just ticked upwards slowly and then at times quickly. And the hype around this team, certainly here in Atlanta, I think people were reasonable in the amount of, was this team contending for a Super Bowl? No, that wasn't the belief down here, but the expectation is playoffs. The expectation is win the NFC South. The NFC South is considered to be in a little bit, you know, of a rebuilding situation, kind of similar to the AFC South in some regards there. And that after the 2-0 start, but it was a 2-0 start where your second win against Green Bay really felt like you captured victory, like out of the jaws of defeat, just kind of the normal way, right? But it was not the most encouraging win. And so now you're 0-2. Your offense has scored 13 points total in the last two games. They have a really hard time getting things going early, and the quarterback is not playing very well. Some of the bright spots, the defense looks awesome, way better than even myself, and I was pretty optimistic about the defense coming into the season. Expected Bijan Robinson is lights out. I mean, he is so freaking good. Yeah. And I think you are seeing the offensive line start to play better after a pretty slow start to the year. But when you have lost two games in a row, everybody does harp on the negatives. And there are some very clear negatives in Atlanta for people to latch onto. So that is why, you know, it's overcast here in the city of Atlanta when it comes to Falcons football. Now, the two wins they have, or the two games they've won, were both at home. Their kind of mission this year is to make Mercedes-Benz Stadium a little bit more hospitable, a little bit more of a true home field advantage. So with Houston coming here to Atlanta, I do think that matters a little bit. If this was a road game for the Falcons, I would like y'all even more than I already do in this one. But it's gloomy with a chance of rain, I guess I would say, here in Atlanta.
Yeah, you know, as an outsider's perspective, I saw it as, oh, the Falcons really made some solid moves defensively in free agency. I thought, oh, man, this is an underrated defense going into the upcoming season. And everything, of course, as always, every NFL team is always on the success of the, you know, quarterback. You know, that is just generic football, you know, understanding. So Desmond Ridder, I'm going, oh, man, they just got Bijan Robinson, who I thought, hey, that guy right there, elite. Everything is advertised.
I mean, y'all in Texas were as well equipped to know how good Bijan is as anybody. So
yeah, so he was amazing at UT. We saw many games of his. Not a UT guy, but I'm a Houston Cougar fan. Sad days for the Cougars. But fair.
Shout out David Bassidy, the Falcons senior director of communications, former Houston. Houston guy as well. So, yep.
There's a lot of connections between the Falcons and Texans. but as an outsider's guy, I'm looking at it like, huh, okay, you got Bijan. Cool. I thought he was going to fall to the Falcons. Felt like he would go there if anywhere he would stop at in draft. It was a matter of when he was going to get drafted, if anyone would be enamored with him. But I'm looking at it like, huh, okay. The Falcons tight end Kyle Pitts has the NFL's lowest catchable target rate. And then I look at Drake London, and he's at third on the list as well. And I'm like, you're looking at Drake London, top 10 pick, Kyle Pitts, top 5 pick, Bijan Robinson, top 10 pick. Like, y'all are investing into this offense. Yeah. And I'm looking at the quarterback position going, hey, man, You gotta crack out of the eggshell sooner or later. We're happy right now with CJ Stroud. Appreciate everything. Thank you, Lovie Smith. Thank you, whoever. I need a thank for CJ Stroud. It is amazing. It is fantastic. I don't know how to get these emotions out because I've never had this in Houston history.
I don't think there's a better feeling in sports, to be quite honest with you, than, and I don't think I'm on an island here, than feeling like you have found a guy. Like, as a young quarterback, I don't think there is a better potential feeling in, but not having, even like drafting LeBron, right? I still just think if you have a dude who through the, like, their rookie season is generational, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton, you know, we saw it in the division. Carolina fans were walking around. You couldn't even talk to them, man. They were like, we got Cam. You guys are just done for the next 20 years. We all know how that turned out. But yeah, there's no better feeling in the world. I am envious of you all right now.
Yeah, so that's where I pose the question, man. Ultimately, what is it right now with the Falcons and Desmond Ridder? How is that feeling right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's the question. Right. And it's a lot of different things. I went and I would encourage actually for a lot of Houston fans, like, if you're not aware of the QB school on YouTube, JT O'Sullivan's channel. Fantastic informational resource. Just great breakdowns of young quarterbacks. And, you know, he's done several on CJ Stroud. Spoiler alert. He loves CJ Stroud just like everybody does. He did one on Desmond Ridder when he played Detroit, and it was pretty informative, but it's been hard. And I even felt like JT had a little bit of a difficult time really kind of honing in on, like, what is a theme of Desmond Ridder's struggles, because it's a little bit of mix and match. It's an assortment. It's, I'll take a couple of these and then a couple of those and then a couple of those. It's a rowboat where just you plug one hole and another one pops up. To give you an example, early in the game against Jacksonville, both of the Falcons' first two sacks, I kind of pinned on Desmond Ridder. I thought he got antsy in the pocket and kind of moved into those sacks. And he got criticized later in the game on the broadcast for really kind of staring down his first read. Part of that, I do think, is by design for the Falcons. They want to make it simple. They want to identify stuff with pre-snap motion, make defenses declare and say, hey, here's your read. It's going to be this or this, and get it out and get it to him, and we'll keep going. But that really came back to bite Desmond Ridder later in the game when he was picked off for a second time by Andre Sisco on a play that was designed to go to Kyle Pitts. The reason we know it was meant to go to Kyle Pitts is because the same play occurred earlier in the game in the first quarter. Kyle Pitts comes wide open on kind of this delayed dagger where Drake London is running a deep post to run off the safety in the corner. It works, but Drake London also kind of gets open. He gets a step on his guy and the safety is a little bit late to respond. But Kyle Pitts has like three steps on his corner for an easier like 15-yard throw with room to run. Desmond Ridder chooses to go deep to Drake London. It's a lower percentage type of throw, a bigger payoff if you hit it. But at that point in the game, you feel like it would have been better to go to Kyle Pitts, get the guaranteed yardage, let him run it up the boundary, maybe turn that into an explosive play. Instead, it's an incomplete pass because it's broken up downfield. And that's when they tried to come back to it later on. I feel as though the incentive was, hey, get this to Kyle Pitts. He's going to be open here. Take the yardage. And Andre Sisco, they get a chance to look at the play too on their sideline. He knows it's coming. He breaks and he intercepts the pass. So it's kind of not taking the opportunities that are given there at times. Sometimes it's trusting the play too much and your first read's not there and you get antsy in the pocket instead of just kind of letting the play break down, but making a play within that chaos. And, you know, then sometimes it's just the organizational part of the offense, getting guys in and out of the huddle on time, being able to make these checks at the line of scrimmage. He is still 8 games into his career as a starter, so he is making some of these young quarterback mistakes. And then kind of the simple through line of all of his starts is there are just accuracy problems where when he does get a guy open, Kyle Pitts against Detroit on a post route that should have been a huge play to start the game, and he misses it, just misses it inexplicably. So that's what I'm talking about when I say it's like a little bit of everything with Desmond Ridder, and he'll get stuff cleaned up. He does a good job of kind of not making the same mistake twice. It's just that he kind of can't carry all of the good at once. He's got to always have like one bad in there. He can't fit all the good in there. He's got to have like some of the good left out for some of the bad. He just needs to get rid of that bad and make it all good.
Interesting. You know, he is coming back home and he is undefeated at home so far. So, hey, you know, maybe the fortunes. True. Maybe the fortunes turn for the Falcons coming back home. You did mention they're trying to make the, you know, Mercedes-Benz into a hostile environment.
Imagine if Desmond Ridder becomes that guy. Like, imagine if at the end of this season, we're sitting here going into next year, he's still the Falcons quarterback, and we're just like, they're turning to Chris Collinsworth. Well, you know, Chris, Desmond Ridder, 15-0 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The Falcons just can't lose here when he's behind center. It's like, it's crazy what Desmond Ridder does. I could not imagine if that was just the case. But, hey, he's undefeated so far.
So far until the Houston Texans enter that stadium. The Houston Texans are coming off a huge win against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Any generic football fan knows a win against the Steelers organization has a certain amount of respect. When it comes to the NFL, there's not many down years for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So you get a win against them. That's a good statement win. And the way we did it, 30-6, I mean, yeah. Absolutely dominated them on JJ Watt Day. Absolutely hyped. I was at the game. I was ecstatic. Wow. I mean,
yeah, that must have been great.
Oh, it was so much fun. So much fun to see an actual franchise be competent again. Like, that was just my bare minimum for, you know, because the last 2 years have been rough, to say the least, for Texans fans. And this city has been waiting so long. You know, we gravitated towards the Oilers way back when they left and the Texans came on, and it was everyone's back on it again. Football is back. You beat the Cowboys week one, and you haven't done anything really as an organization with David Carr. You moved to Gary Kubiak, some success there. Enter J.J. Watt in that era, some more success. Some
don't
crazy
leave out life. My guy Matt Schaub. Don't leave.
We
don't
love
leave
Matt Schaub down here. Yeah, we love Matt Schaub. He is apparently a quarterback assistant for y'all. Yes. So.
I remember that trade because to tell you a quick Matt Schaub story, when we drafted him as the backup to Michael Vick, people loved him. He was so good in the preseason, even though Michael Vick is still the king of Atlanta. But at that time, I mean, it was just the peak Michael Vick years. Like, there was no question that he was the starter, but every team loves their backup quarterback. But like everybody loved Matt Schaub. And so there was a game against the New England Patriots, and this was early, like, King Tom Brady coming off of Super Bowls, but he wasn't yet, you know, the GOAT, but he was, like, Tom Brady's damn good quarterback. Mike Vick's out, Matt Schaub's in that game, toe-to-toe with Tom Brady. So after that game, everybody was just like, we have the two best quarterbacks in the league. Like, again, we're walking around like Panthers fans after they draft Cam Newton, and then we traded, you know, him to y'all, of course, and everybody was just kind of like, goodbye. You know, it was like the Wolverine meme where we're staring at pictures in bed of, of Matt Schaub. Yeah. So to see him do well in Houston, we were like, okay, at least we felt kind of validated, I think. We were good. You were good. After all, we knew it. Yeah.
We had a lot of excitement in those years. And then there's some dark years when we enter some of Bill O'Brien's era. And the redacted quarterback that we had here, we call him redacted on our show. I enjoyed the highs. I enjoyed them very high. And the lows are very, very low. And so it feels great to have D'Amico Ryans in here. It's like a refresh button for the Houston Texans and this whole organization. Even our owner, Cal McNair, has really refreshed his image in front of the fans as well. Everything about us right now is just the stove is hot. Like, it is hot right now. National media love. Everything is going really, really good for the Texans. I don't know how to receive this. I've never had this before. What do I do? Anybody listening, maybe Patriots fans or someone that has had much, much success. Hell, Falcons, y'all went to a Super Bowl with Matt Ryan. And sure, we're not going to get into the details because that still hurts. And that hurts me. But damn it. That must have felt great. Like, that must have felt fantastic.
For a little bit.
It's tough to escape the end product there. I'm trying to focus more on the pre-Super Bowl and all the – just that era of Matt Ryan. You had a quarterback. You had Tony Gonzalez. You had Roddy White. You had a great, fantastic team for quite a few years. So – I'm just struggling on how to receive this glamour and national media love. I don't know how to do this. All right. So I'm going into this game and I'm chugging the Kool-Aid. Like, there's never been Kool-Aid in our fridge for the Houston Texans. There's been a lot of sour stuff in there. And it's great that we've cleaned out the fridge. And I don't know who made this Kool-Aid, but it is delicious right now. And I am ecstatic. I am elated. And I am chugging the Kool-Aid. And I am moving forward with this franchise. I am entrusting my whole fandom into them right now. It just feels like everything they're doing is right.
Yeah.
And so we go into the matchup, and I'm going, huh, what do the Falcons, what can they do to beat this hot team?
I think it starts with Atlanta's defense, which is not anything. You know, you brought up Matt Ryan, you brought up Roddy White, Julio Jones. You know, they have always been an offense first team, but this year, really, it's their secondary, it's their kind of second level players that are transforming this defense. And that's no slight to the defensive line, which they have really done a good job in totally revamping. They've got kind of a little bit of a hockey line two rotation thing, which seems to be in vogue across the league. I've just noticed that a lot of teams are saying that, whatever that means. They've always rotated defensive linemen. But I think the key to, or the path to victory for Atlanta, to me, starts with Jesse Bates and Ryan Nielsen. We saw in week one, Jesse Bates against Bryce Young, you know, the number one overall pick, a rookie quarterback as well. He had two interceptions in that game on very similar plays, just passes over the middle. Boom, he undercut him. Two easy picks. The Texans like to attack the middle of the field as well. You know, they made hay against the Steelers, kind of attacking their Tampa 2 looks. And I think that what the Falcons need to try to do is just confuse CJ Stroud. He's been great with anticipation. Make that anticipation kind of come back to bite him. And I think if the Falcons can force a couple of turnovers through the air, then they've got a chance to control this game, because I believe offensively you're going to see them come back to the norm a little bit more. I say that, and on the first drive, watch them just flea flicker. Boom. We're going big play right out of the gate, which would honestly not surprise me. But I do think you're going to see them. Tyler Algier, let's get him going. Cordarrelle Patterson is probably going to make his real first appearance on offense this weekend. So, you know, you'll mix them in, of course, with Bijan, and that is probably going to be their focal point. So if you can force those turnovers on defense, again, give some confusing looks to CJ Stroud. They've liked to play man, which is a little bit different than what they did under Dan Quinn and even under Dean Pease, who kind of balanced it out a little bit more. Jeff Okuda's playing really well. One game, small sample size, but his first game as a Falcon in the regular season looked really good. AJ Terrell is off to a great start this season. So jam the receivers, the great Houston receivers, kind of confuse some of the looks in the middle of the field, make it murky, and then try to maybe get to CJ Stroud with a blitzer, a simulated pressure, what have you, and create those turnovers, create chaos. And that's really where I think the game plan should start for Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm glad you got into, we basically are just talking offense versus defense, Texans O versus the Falcons D.
Yeah.
And so I say that to say this, AJ Terrell, fantastic player. I think he just follows Nico Collins. He's had a huge game against the Steelers 2 weeks before, another huge game. Or 3 weeks.
I've got him on many fantasy teams. Well, two, but
he has been absolutely amazing in spite of the preconceived hate coming from fans with him before entering the season. All of that has gone away.
I'm not familiar with that hate. What was that hate?
So a lot of the Texans fans, this is not me. I will say that first and foremost. I always saw Nico Collins as someone that intangibles as a wide receiver, 6'3", 6'4", and can run like a deer. You traded up for him for a reason. I'm going to entrust, why did we trade up for him? And I'm looking at, oh, okay, this guy can do similar things to, and I will shamelessly plug John Crumpler, who's also from Atlanta, writes for the Texans Wire, did a piece where Nico Collins could be utilized like Julio Jones in the slot. That was something Julio Jones was utilized in the slot a lot inside Atlanta's schemes during those days. So maybe in a lot of fans said, you're comparing him to Julio. No, we're not. No, we're not. It's not Julio Jones. Okay. We're not saying that. But if you could utilize some of the abilities that he does have, being 6'3", 6'4", fast wide receiver, good high catching point, really good hands. CJ Stroud, we saw in the podium just last week, had talked about Nico Collins and said last year in the film that he saw with him that he was open a lot of the times. Whether or not that was a shade thrown at Davis Mills, who knows? A lot of fans wanted him cut before the season. They thought he could get no separation whatsoever. And that all stems from the previous quarterback, you know, and it's different when you have a good quarterback, a decent quarterback to a great quarterback, in my opinion, in CJ Stroud. He's played phenomenal. So I have to give him those flowers. Nico Collins on AJ Terrell, I feel like that's just not, Nico's not going to make hay here this week. Where I see the Texans offense actually doing good in is, sure, you could have Dalton Schultz or whatever. I'm really emphasizing Tank Dell. I think Tank Dell is the guy that is going to do some really good work against this Atlanta Falcons defense. You did mention Jeff Okuda being back and playing well in the small sample size. Robert Woods has been utilized in the slot as well as Tank Dell. So both guys will be interchangeable. They do use Tank Dell outside regardless of his size. He is just a fantastic route runner. I'm a huge Houston Cougar fan. There's a lot of Houston bias when it comes to Tank Dell, so I do have to slow it down sometimes. But I do think that he is going to have a really good game against the Falcons. Am I wrong there?
I don't think you are. That being said, you know, going into Detroit's matchup and honestly against Jacksonville, like, the Falcons have done a pretty good job of shutting down some pretty talented passing groups and groups that have that versatility, you know, groups that have a few guys who do different things. That being said, I think Tank Dell is a little bit of a unique matchup that the Falcons may not have experienced so far. So in that regard, I'm curious to see, do they have Jeff Okuda, who has that fluidity, that technique, really like his, you know, mobility in and out of breaks to mirror that type of quickness. Do they have him kind of shadow Tank Dell a little bit, or do they trust Dee Alford, who is a former CFL player, but really shined last year in a small role for Atlanta and then outright earned the nickel corner job for Atlanta. And so far this season, he's had moments where he's looked really, really good. He's had moments where he's been picked on. Do they trust him to go after Tank Dell? I think he too has some of that quickness that you like in the slot to mirror a player like this. I don't know if they have anybody who can match that top end speed. You know, maybe Jeff Okuda can do that. So I would expect, you know, how do they use their safeties? Does that force their hand in some way? That's the cat and mouse game that is going to be so much fun to watch in this one, because I do think that Houston has some of the physical talent that can stress a defense. And it's not just CJ Stroud making incredible plays or the scheme being lights out. It is truly like these guys can win their one-on-one matchups. And that does force you to pay attention as a defensive play caller and as these players on the field. So you can't always just attack. Which is kind of what I want them to do in this matchup. So that's going to be really fascinating. And it is a strength on strength type of deal. So Tank Dell could be an X factor in this game for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, as much as the Texans passed last week against the Pittsburgh Steelers, they still were honest and continued to run the ball with Damian Pierce, who had his best game last week. I do still wonder how much of a factor our interior offensive line is going to be against your interior pass rush. I say this because the Indianapolis Colts game, we had Jarrett Patterson. We are presumed the starting offensive line for practice, by the way, for the Texans: Laremy Tunsil, Titus Howard, Jarrett Patterson, Shaq Mason, and then George Fant. So we should be having Tunsil back.
Wow.
We should be having, yeah, right?
Yeah, getting guys from back, okay.
Some first stringers. That's I don't know what that is in terms of offensive line, because
the offensive line has been a nightmare for me to read and try to figure out. So I'm just glad that, yeah, that people are kind of coming back at least all at once. It makes it easier for me.
We've had backups, third stringers, guys that we traded for. I mean, shout out to Kendrick Green. He is going to be on the IR, out for the rest of the season, torn meniscus. But he had a great game against the Steelers. But I do say that the interior against y'all's interior, I said that because of the Colts game, man. We, Grover Stewart, DeForest Buckner, and yes, these guys are top of their class, but that is nothing to go away from Grady Jarrett and the other guy's name, because I cannot say his
David
name.
David Onyemata.
Yeah, there we go. And DA. And we'll go with that. And I say that because, man, Jarrett Patterson struggled heavily against Grover Stewart. Any hole that Damian Pierce had, it was, oh, Grover Stewart just swallowed that up. Oh, DeForest Buckner. It was like Hungry, Hungry Hippos. It was just ridiculous. And so, and it's nothing against Patterson. He's a six-round rookie. Yes, he's improved every single week. His best game just last week against the Steelers. But that's a tall task to go up against this Atlanta interior rush. That is my biggest worry. What do you think about that?
You're right to identify that as the strength, certainly of the defensive line. I would say that David Onyemata is playing just as well, if not better, than Grady Jarrett right now. And that's not a slight to Grady Jarrett. That's praise to David Onyemata, because both guys are playing excellently. David Onyemata had a sack and a half last week against Jacksonville. He's been very disruptive. They're kind of interchangeable as that three technique, two eye kind of look that they like to do. They really are kind of depending on their inside linebackers, their safeties to fill gaps. So it is a single gap defense. So in terms of that interior blocking scheme, you know, you're going to have guys coming downhill and hitting some of these gaps. It's not just going to be, all right, punch, and then, you know, guys are responsible for two gaps, like you may have seen against Pittsburgh or some other teams in the AFC. Calais Campbell is going to be a little bit of an X factor here in the run game. Like, that's where I think his biggest impact has come so far. He's been really, really good at just, you know, block shedding, you know, punch, straighten out, shed, and then make the tackle. He's obviously really long. But yeah, it is going to be the interior, those A gaps, the B gaps with the linebackers. The Falcons like to blitz and bring that simulated pressure from the inside. Especially, you'll get guys like Caden Ellis. Nate Landman is a backup linebacker who has been filling in, right, you know, for the foreseeable future, will be filling in for Troy Anderson, who has done year. And they, you know, the Falcons had really high hopes. He's in his second year, ultra athletic linebacker. You know, he would have been, ironically, a player that would have been fun to watch against Tank Dell. I'm not saying they would have walked him out there, you know, line him up and man coverage, but if you are looking at some of these different schemes, you know, you could run a Tampa 2 and maybe trust Troy Anderson to kind of get back and retreat fast enough to match somebody like that. But he's not in the game. I'm not going to spend any more time talking about hypotheticals. So it is going to be, if the pocket is really tight on CJ Stroud, it's probably coming from the interior. So I do think you're right to identify that. So my question is, you know, I guess, how has CJ Stroud been moving laterally? You know, I know he's pretty solid when he needs to step up into the pocket, or even when that pressure is kind of in his face. I love the retreating, like Aaron Rodgers little like wrist flick with anticipation that he's got. But if he's got the pressure in his face, how is he kind of moving side to side?
The pocket awareness and the pocket maneuverability has been really great from CJ Stroud. It is just something that it's just weird to see from a rookie quarterback. His exponential growth in 4 weeks has been crazy. I saw all of them in training camp as much as I could have gone. And every single week at training camp, he got better. Every single week in preseason, he got better. And in every single week in the NFL, he's gotten better.
So he started the year in midseason form, is what you're telling
me. I guess so, right? Like, I just hope it continues. I'm so excited about it. But yeah, his pocket awareness has been fantastic. The play you're talking about was, he was going up against Alex Highsmith. You had a tight end, I want to say it was Dalton Schultz, missed that crack block. And Alex Highsmith's about to nail him. And he just literally does, like you said, Aaron Rodgers, kind of back steps and boom, flick pass. Here's a low pass, Nico. You got to catch it. Nico calling sure hands, catches it and keeps going for a little bit more. It was it's fantastic to see. So, yes, his pocket awareness is high. It's very well, and it's a good job by Bobby Slowick as well, our offensive coordinator. Yes, you know, he can do whatever he wants, but it still has to translate onto the field, and CJ Stroud's done a good job of that. But Bobby Slowick and his coaching staff, what they did against the best pass rushing defense in the NFL with practice squad guys in the offensive line, backups to the backups, zero sacks. Like, that is...
T.J. Watt wasn't even close. Yeah.
He didn't sniff him. Like, yeah. It was just crazy. And I'm looking at the play designs, and I'm like, oh, my God. You got John Mechie. People, John Mechie, who had leukemia, who came off a torn ACL, and he is in motion going, and they hike the ball and pops T.J. Watt and is blocking T.J. Watt on multiple occasions.
Yeah.
And that right there is just, I mean, A, that's going to translate to more snaps, but B, to me, the most important thing is this coach and DeMeco Ryans has our team sold. Because when you got guys that they're going to do, yeah, coach, I'll do that for you. Yeah, me? Oh, buddy, I'm good. I'm good, man. T.J.? No, T.J.
It reminds me a lot of Atlanta's offense in that you get that buy-in from the receivers. You need to have the guys that are able to do that. I didn't know that was part of John Mechie's game. So that was interesting to find out. But when I was watching Houston against Pittsburgh, I do think that Houston, because of their personnel, because of the quarterback, they do tend to go five wide and just, hey, CJ, you're in shotgun, figure it out kind of deal, much more than Atlanta does. But especially early downs, they bring everything in. You've got kind of those flex bone tight ends or receivers that are split back, and they use the receivers and the leverage and the angle blocks to spring that outside zone or stretch zone run game. It looks very similar to some of the stuff Atlanta does. And I don't think that's necessarily, you know, by accident, when you consider the backgrounds of the Gary Kubiak, the Alex Gibbs, that whole kind of scheme that ladders up to the Shanahan whole model. And it is really interesting. I think offensively for Atlanta, this is a little bit of a strength on weakness matchup with their running game and Bijan's ability and Tyler Algier's ability to break tackles. I'm curious. I view that as the weakness of Houston's defense, is kind of their run defense and just the reliability of making tackles. Am I right about that?
Exactly. I mean, even last week, sure, we held the Steelers to 6 points. But if you pay attention to the second half, the Steelers came right out the gate and said, okay, we're going to run the football. And the Texans did not have no answer for it for quite some time. Sure, there was a stop here and there, and they got big stops when they needed to. But, man, many times Najee Harris, Jaylen Warren, they were just breaking the seams, going up, whether it was outside, whether it was in the gut. I mean, the weakness of this Texans defense is in the interior. It's the interior defensive line. And there's nothing against Sheldon Rankins. He's done a good job. But, you know, it takes more than just one guy. It takes a village, as always, you know. And Malik Collins is a really good pass rusher. In the interior, but his run stuffing ability is lacking, you know, and there's not a lot of depth behind it. And that was something I was worried about this season. They got a Hassan Ridgeway, but he's not going to be playing this game. He got on the IR after the Week 1 Ravens game, where he was fantastic. He knows the scheme. He knows DeMeco. He's a former 49er. So he knows
a lot of former 49ers.
Exactly. And he did a fantastic job. He's not going to be there. So, oh, well, boo-hoo, Kurt Heinisch steps in. Kurt Heinisch is who Kurt Heinisch is. He's a third defensive lineman that on most teams is either the fourth or practice squad guy, someone that continues to get, you know, interchangeable within the 53-man in the practice squad. There's nothing against Heinisch. That's just who you got right now, man. And that is something that the Texans, I thought, could have improved this offseason. But that is a weakness of this team, is the interior. You definitely have Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier. And it scares me to say, hear you say that Cordarrelle Patterson could be back. And I'm just not very happy to hear that either, because we saw the struggles against them last week. And it's something I haven't seen too many teams. Again, we're only 4 weeks in, but right. I do wonder how many teams are going to, okay, look at what the Steelers just did in that second half. could we hone in more on running the football against the Texans? How are they going to stop it? How can we employ it more into an abundance amount and getting more of those 7, 8? You know, that's the biggest thing you don't want. You don't want Bijan to get rolling.
Yeah.
You're not going to stop him. Like, go ahead.
The stress test is coming, my friend. If you're worried about that being the blueprint for teams, you're going to find out on Sunday.
Oh, exactly.
Because I think Houston's game plan right now, and this is absolutely what it should be. It should be, hey, we're going pedal to the metal on offense. We want to build a lead, which has been an issue for the Falcons. So Houston on the season has averaged 6 points in the first quarter, you know, across their four games, 8 points over the last three. So let's just say a touchdown in the first quarter. The Falcons, 0.8 points in the first quarter. So the math likes Houston to come out ahead 7-0 after the first quarter, which is just a long, complicated way of saying Houston tends to start fast and Atlanta has not this season. That is a real concern for me in this game. If Houston is able to, again, through their passing game, because I think that that is the strength of this team right now, is just, hey, let's keep funneling through CJ Stroud, right? Give him the ball. If they're able to get out to a 10-0 lead, right? That is something the Falcons don't want. It's what threw them off of their rhythm and kind of their game plan against Jacksonville last week. They want to get off to a fast start, but even if they don't, they need their defense, which has done a good job of keeping this game close. They're going to run the ball. They're going to be patient. They're going to have the attempts on the ground, or at least in the quick passing game, which I think they're beginning to view as an extension of the run game. I haven't asked that question explicitly, but that's just what it looks like to me. And they're going to really punish Houston's run defense, unless if Houston does jump out to that fast lead. This year, at least, you know, when they got behind Jacksonville, they did turn to Desmond Ridder a little bit more than I thought they would. So who knows? But they're going to give the ball to the running backs, I think, a lot in this one. And Cordarrelle Patterson, in his early season games with Atlanta, has been just kind of lights out. So, you know, who knows? He maybe he's the X factor for Atlanta if he does, you know, see more than like 10 touches.
Yeah, it's fun to think about. And, you know, with the Texans defense, the interior is a weakness. The rest of the defense, though, specifically our secondary, has been a strength for us. And this is even without Derek Stingley. Steven Nelson, man.
He's so good.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, Ruben, my host, he was like, dude, Steven Nelson's the best cornerback in training camp. And I'm like, man, that's including Derek Stingley. You know, mm-hmm. Derek Stingley had himself a fantastic training camp. He's out for the game, by the way. He's on the IR. But, you know, that's where I'm like, okay, you got Steven Nelson. Tavier Thomas is going to be coming back for this game off of broken wrist surgery. I mean, dude, I thought he was going to be out for a few more weeks. And he's like, no, I'm good to go. Successful surgery. I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I wonder you could probably brace that, right, and just make it a club. And, like, you don't need to turn your wrist at all? I don't know.
Yeah, no. I mean, we had a club game in Glover Quinn, so, you know, way back when. Who knows? But he is back, and he played fantastic at the nickel position for us earlier this year. He had really good play from the nickel during his time 2 years ago when Lovie Smith was only the defensive coordinator. So we hope that continues to translate. The secondary, specifically our safeties, Jimmy Ward, Jalen Petrie, they're both playing for this game. And the trend with this Texans defense, week one against the Ravens, you only had one of them in Jalen Petrie. You had a fantastic first half. Second half, Jalen Petrie gets a knee in the chest, bruised lung, out for the rest of the half. And the Texans defense didn't look the same. Both safeties are out against the Colts. It's their worst game played defensively. Week three, Jimmy Ward is back. Best game played defensively to that point. Week four, both of them, Jimmy Ward, Jalen Petrie, are back against the Steelers. Fantastic game defensively. Mm-hmm. So they're both playing against the Falcons. They're going to be healthy. And that, to me, does not bode well for Falcons fans I believe Jalen Petrie has himself a big game. He is someone that has helped against the run, mostly because they do play Petrie right at the line of scrimmage sometimes. They like playing him closer to the box, and he can also play out. He is just a fantastic athlete, someone that is a under the radar. If Jesse Bates is the best safety in the NFL, Jalen Petrie is coming for that title. That is as much as I would say about Petrie. I think he's that fantastic. How does Atlanta, with the chess match right there, offense, the passing game for Atlanta, go up against our secondary?
I would say at this point in time, I'm probably giving the edge to most defenses against Atlanta's passing attack, regardless of how they're playing or the personnel. Like, Atlanta does have some real issues to figure out with its passing game. There are moments where, you know, a third and 15, you know, that seems to actually be the magical down and distance. If Atlanta's facing third and 15, you guys just go ahead and start walking back. It's going to be a first down because Desmond Ridder can like rip a ball into Mac Hollins on a third and 15 on a comeback route or whatever. But that's kind of the only time that it's just looks the way it should. Outside of that, it's just been disjointed. There have been missed deep shots when they've tried to connect on them. You know, the point I mentioned earlier about kind of Kyle Pitts missing him the first time around, getting picked, trying to go to him the second time around. They're not taking necessarily the chunk yardage that presents itself that they weren't expecting. That's kind of the improvisational skills. And it surprises me to say this, but they're just not really there yet with Desmond Ridder. It does seem very, I don't have the answer to this question or this test or whatever. The defense isn't doing what I expected. And the plan is either not there or, you know, not gotten to quickly enough for X, Y, or Z reasons. And that's why, like, at this point in time, I would favor through the passing game most defenses. But Atlanta is, Bijan Robinson has done a great job of kind of mitigating some of that through his just own athletic ability. A great option, maybe the best just total emergency option, is just a check down to Bijan Robinson. And he then can make three or four guys miss. So that could be where the tackling issues trump some of the coverage abilities that Houston has. If you just get it to guys quickly, then it becomes an open field game. And maybe that does favor the Falcons because they've got physicality at wide receiver and they've got shiftiness and agility with Bijan, unlike anything I've ever seen. So that would probably be the game plan. The other thing would just be, you know, jump balls down the field. Kyle Pitts, for the lack of production, is still a phenomenal athlete. I mean, he is running by safeties and corners when he gets those releases. Either Desmond Ridder's just not looking his way on those plays, or the ball's not going where it should, and it's off target a little bit. So, you know, to your point about him having the highest, you know, uncatchable percentage or off target percentage in the league. So that's kind of my big issue with Atlanta's passing game. What you said though about Petrie playing close to the line of scrimmage, right in the box, I kind of think that's what Atlanta wants. If you can get those guys in there tight against Detroit, you know, they made me eat my own words because I was getting asked all week by Detroit media members, all right, should we just load the box? And I was saying, I think that's what Atlanta wants. And then Detroit totally blew up the line of scrimmage against Atlanta. So maybe Houston makes me my own words and I'll find different words to say in the future. But right now, I think Atlanta wants to bring those guys in and then get the edge on them. Get Caleb McGarry out there in space. Drew Dahlman at center is terrific at pulling from that position. They do a lot of the way that defensive lines use twists and stunts to get angles on offensive linemen. The Falcons do that with their offensive line, and you'll have Chris Lindstrom, you'll have Caleb McGarry kind of kick in on a pass block and Chris Lindstrom kind of leverage block the defensive end. It's really cool and it's fun to watch. So I would be, you know, a very interested to see what they would have designed for a defense that does like to keep that box safety down close to the line of scrimmage. And I would expect you see them really try to out leverage them with some of these wide receiver crackbacks, get the tight ends in there. I kind of think that's playing to Atlanta's favor a little bit.
Okay. That's rather interesting. You know, all righty, Will, we're getting near the home stretch here. We're getting near to wrap this one up. Falcons are facing the Texans. We're going to y'all's place. What is the prediction, Will? What do you got right now? If you have a score, if you don't, up to you. But what do you got?
I mean, all week I've felt like Houston is a team that's really clicking right now. I see no reason why that should stop. You know, I think Atlanta's defense being their identity and being a part that is playing really well for real. You know, it's not been fluky through the first four games. They've played good offenses. They've held them in check. It's been very impressive. I think that they will at least hold Houston's offense down a little bit. The issue for me is I just don't trust Atlanta's offense to really do much at this point, even with Bijan. You know, so I see this being something like a 24 to 14 or 17 point game. And I just see that being more in Houston's favor, right? They've got the capability offensively to put up 30. So I think holding them to 24 is a little bit of a win for the defense. And who knows, maybe one of those seven of those points come via Houston's defense. We saw Atlanta turn the ball over for a pick six last week. That's the type of thing that's in play. But I see something like that until Atlanta's offense shows me that it can really put up points at a consistent clip. I have a hard time trusting it right now.
CJ Stroud has zero interceptions going through 4 weeks of NFL football. It's unbelievable to see what he's done as a rookie. The Houston Texans just seem like they're the damsel right now that everyone's loving to look at. And
I love them, man. I really do. They're good.
It's crazy, man. I don't know what to do with this attention, you know. But I do know what to predict. It's 24-13 Texans. That was my prediction, actually.
Okay.
So I had a 24-13. I'm going to respect the Falcons a little bit more. I'm going to say we're not going to drop 30 for the third week in a row. We had 37 against the Jaguars, 30 against the Steelers. The Falcons' defense is a solid defense, and I do wonder when does Damian Pierce have, you know, yes, he had a good game last week, but, you know, we saw these huge games from him last year where
he's too good to keep being held down like this.
And sure, you know, we can say as much as we want, it's the offensive line, you know, good running backs, man. Sooner or later, you got to overcome the talent deficiencies at the O-line, and you just got to do your thing. And he did it last week against the Steelers. Maybe he gets back on track. Who knows? I see another zero interceptions from CJ Stroud going through 5 weeks of football. But I do think 24-13 is the prediction. I am excited about this team. I'm very excited about this team.
You should be. Good. I'm happy for you.
It's just crazy, man.
Dude,
I'm not
basking it. Like, if anything, this feeling right now, you've already won this season. Because a month and a half ago, you never would have expected to feel anything close to, even if the Texans somehow finished with, you know, six wins or whatever. Maybe it was like, all right, we won a game. We got a two game win streak in weeks six and seven. We won another game in week 10. Like, for them to be this exciting, this early, like, bask in this, man. Even if it doesn't go well the rest of the year, these 2 weeks are gravy. Like, they're better than anything you guys expected, and now expect bigger because you guys are capable of it.
Hey, CJ Stroud said at the podium, he wants Texans fans to feel pride whenever they put their gear on. And damn it, I'm strutting my stuff. I don't know about any other fans out there, but
that's
I'm
what
strutting
it's all about.
It, man. We are excited here. Will, I appreciate you coming on the Believe in Texans podcast. You got anything to share for anybody? Let them know right now.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for having me on, Harley. This was a blast. Again, I'm really excited for you guys because it's so much fun to have that feeling. You guys can check out the newest episode of Believe in Falcons is up. I talked with Cole Thompson, who covers the Texans down in the area. So he gave me the lowdown on Houston on the show. So again, that is up. And then Ovi Mahaley and I will have our thoughts on the outcome of this game bright and early Monday morning. So if you want to hear our thoughts, win, lose, or draw, hopefully it's not a draw. Please, God, not a draw. You guys can check that out. Everything I write is over at thefalcoholic.com. You can find me on Twitter at Will McFadden. But again, Harley, this was a blast. Thank you so much, man.
Awesome. Everybody, y'all can find me at @thelead_HOU on YouTube and all of social media. Make sure you're tuning into the Believe in Texans podcast as well as the Believe in Falcons podcast. We got a lot of crossovers coming y'all's way. So we do appreciate everybody that tuned in, everyone that's listened. Thank y'all, and y'all have a great night. All righty.